Hello and welcome to Relationship Rewind on WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill. I'm your host, Jazz Bradley, a youth educator and advocate at Next Step Domestic Violence Project. Often, young people are expected to just know how to be in relationships in healthy and equal ways, but we learn through the examples of the relationships given to us, and big place we see these examples is in the media we watch. That's why this show uses media, like movies and TV shows, to start conversations about harmful and unhealthy behaviors in the relationships portrayed. But this is not to pass judgment on the media that we're discussing. Every month, we invite young people in Maine to give their perspective and to voice their thoughts, opinions, and experiences around what they've seen in media and how it has impacted them or the people they know. There are sensitive materials in and spoilers of the media we discuss. Today's episode focuses on the song Messy by Lola Young, a powerful track that captures the complicated feelings that can come with love, conflict, and the ways we sometimes justify unhealthy patterns in relationships. Music has a unique way of helping us recognize behaviors we might otherwise overlook, and this song opens the door to some important discussions about communication, responsibility, and what healthy relationships should look like. To help break this down, I'm joined by Eileen, an attorney at Next Step who works closely with survivors. Together, we'll talk about some of the themes in the song, how people sometimes normalize harmful behaviors by calling them messy or complicated, and what it means to build relationships that are safe, respectful, and supportive. If you need support or would like to learn more about dating violence or domestic violence, please reach out to us at Next Step by calling our 24/7 helpline at 1-800-315-5579. You can also find resources for young people on our website at nextstepdvproject.org/4-youth. Keep up with our community events and see upcoming information about our show by following us at Next Step Domestic Violence Project on Facebook or on Instagram at nextstepdvprojectofficial. I'd like to now introduce Eileen for our conversation about Lola Young's song Messy. Well, thanks, Eileen, for joining me today to discuss something that you had actually brought up to all of staff because it was Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month in February. Relationship Rewind being all about diving into the behaviors that are normalized in social media through movies and TV shows and even music. With that experience and growing up, did you ever see any of these things or relate to any of these things through media?
Well, my growing up period was a long, long time ago. And I don't think you probably typically have people that are in their late 70s on your podcast. So it was a different world then. In my house, I grew up in a family of 10 children, and I was the second oldest, but my older sister was born deaf. So I was always sort of like the oldest one in the family. And we did not have a TV until I was 13 because my father was an English professor and he really believed that TV was the devil. I watched TV if I happened to be lucky enough to be at a friend's house in the afternoon after school. I could see the Mickey Mouse Club or the Dick Clark Show. I did not have a lot of influence from social media. Social media didn't even exist when I was growing up. I had a different kind of influence, I guess, which is still exists today, which is peer pressure. You know, you look around and you look at each other and you think, well, that person looks cool and I don't. What are they doing differently than me? And what should I do? I probably had a kind of an unusual growing up because both of being shielded from TV, as well as we had music in our house all the time. That was kind of the thing, but it was from records. My dad would come home with a new Harry Belafonte record, or we'd sit around the radio listening to some piece of classical music, or he'd play an opera and he would tell us what was happening because it was always in another language. My influences were really, I was very sheltered.
So over time, because of media was so different then, and your experience throughout the years, how has that changed for you? You know, how did you come into this work being in the DV world now and helping survivors?
How has it changed for me from when I was growing up to the present? And, you know, I have had to, because I've worked my whole life, I've had to get myself tuned in with my surroundings. And I did have children who brought me exposure to a lot of things. But I had to learn how to use the internet in a way that was useful for me. I did Facebook like everybody in my generation. And when you tell me about all these other things like Spotify, and lots of times somebody will talk about an app that I have never heard of, I only use the things that I find useful for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that by the time they came into my life, I was already pretty set for who I was. So I can't say that things have influenced me. When I'm watching TV and I'm watching the news, for example, everything that's put out on there, I sort of filter through my own experiences and my own, the other sources of information that I have. So I can't say that I look at something and I think, oh my God, that's my mind just got changed about something. It may make me stop and think about it, but it doesn't, I don't have anything that I can think of that just pows me and says, okay, you were wrong all along, and now you have to think this way. The other thing about how did I get into this work? I am a survivor of domestic violence myself from an era when there were no support services available. It was just sort of the kind of thing that people didn't talk about. You were embarrassed about it. You didn't even tell, I didn't even tell my parents what was happening to me 4 blocks away in my house. It really only came out when there was a serious enough injury that I had to get some sort of medical attention. And so I made my mind up through that. I was always attracted to the law, but that I think that that particular experience in my life made me a rooting for the underdog kind of person. I probably was born that way, but the law seemed like a way to go to be able to help in a real strong way. I was over 40 when I started law school, so I had a whole other career working for a railroad for 20 years before I went to law school. And then once I became a lawyer, it was very natural to sort of develop a practice that was in the family law area. And of course, if you're working in the family law area, you're going to come into domestic violence.
Thank you for sharing some of your story and your journey throughout your life. It sounds like you've been through and experienced a lot, and I'm so glad that you made your way to us here at Next Step. And you are such a joy to have around. We're so lucky to have you as a full-time staff attorney for us. It is such a blessing for all of our survivors too. It's such a big help and such a need. One thing that you had mentioned was that you grew up around a lot of music. So your tastes are probably like a lot of different genres, or you have that one that really stands out to you. But you had actually brought up this song to staff and had been like, have you guys, really listened to this song? Did you know about this song? I was really feeling this way. And I was just wondering if we could talk about the song Messy by Lola Young and what made you send that to us and your feelings around it. And what did you see that like stood out to you about the song?
Well, I was lucky enough to see her perform it, and it was on the Grammys. I was watching the Grammys, and it was one of the songs that was nominated for Song of the Year or one of the Grammy Awards, and she actually performed it. I had the words, but I also had her sitting at the piano playing and singing this song with so much passion and so much power that there was no way I could look away or not be pulled into the story that she was telling with this song. And I think that I often can't understand lyrics. A lot of music that is modern, whatever you want to call it, feels to me like I almost have to have the printed word in front of me to fully grasp what the person is singing about. That wasn't the case with this one. Every word was clear and it was so powerful. And because I'm in this work, I think I was struck by the lyrics as being so descriptive of the experiences that I, as a survivor myself, and I know many of the people that I've worked with who are survivors, have experienced.
Is there a certain lyric that stood out to you the most?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was the chorus. The first time she sang it, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then that really made me pay attention and listen. And it was like, you hate the whole damn lot. You hate the whole damn lot. And that's sort of a refrain that comes through, or it's repeated several times throughout her song. And every time she sang it, she was like so raw. And I think that that is, I really, really resonated for me because when you're in the middle of an abusive relationship, whether it be dating or marriage or any kind of relationship, and it's abusive, you can't do anything right. There is nothing that you can say or do or be that is going to be acceptable when the abuser's in a certain place. So that jumped out at me. You hate the whole damn lot.
I think also going on that piece of like the chaos, it feels like, she's singing about the chaos that's happening either within her life or within someone's life, however someone may take the song or relate to it. And she's singing about like the back and forth between, to me, it's her and a partner or two partners going back and forth. And it's really, to me, seeing like her identity is being taken from her. She's being told to be good enough, even though she's trying. She's being told that she needs to get a job, but then she's getting criticized for getting the job. All of those back and forth pieces. And that, as we know, the gaslighting piece, it feels like there's a lot of gaslighting happening. Definitely some isolation going on if she's not able to like get out and have friends. And the partner's kind of just controlling, as we know, the power and control piece. It's happening within this song.
Absolutely. And I found it interesting. I looked her up and looked up what she had herself said about this particular song, because this song was a huge hit in the UK. I read that it was the number one most downloaded track in the UK in 2025. Didn't reach that height in the US, but it was still on the Billboard Hot 100, number 14. So, I mean, it's still very popular. So she was interviewed about the song. It's part of an album called This Wasn't Meant for You Anyway, which I think is kind of interesting. To your point of a lot of things are going on, people are complicated and complex. It often is more than one thing that is creating anxiety or angst or anger or any of the emotions that you can pull out of the air. And she has a mental health issue. She's been diagnosed with a schizoaffective disorder. She also has ADHD. And she herself felt like this song, Messy, was about herself and how messy she is and how messy her life is. And I was struck by that. She's 25 years old, so she's young. And I was struck by that when I read that she's doing this self-blaming thing that we often do as survivors. You know, it must be me. There's something wrong with me. I'm just not good enough. And yet her lyrics, she's very aware that no matter what she does, it seems to me that she feels like, would she say, because I'm too messy and then I'm just too damn clean. You told me get a job, then you ask where the hell I've been, and I'm too perfect till I open my big mouth. I want to be me. Is that not allowed? That to me feels like an understanding on her part that it didn't make any difference how she is, who she is, what she says, what she does. She's not going to be good enough for this particular person that she's written this song to or about. And while she is taking responsibility, probably more than I think she should, for how she feels, she's also in the back of her head got this understanding and knowledge that this isn't right. I will continue to listen to Lola Young because I want to see how her lyrics evolve as her self-understanding evolves and as she matures and becomes aware of her own personal power and her strength, because I suspect her lyrics are going to change as well, or they may be on the same topic, but she's going to have a fuller perspective and understanding of all of the dynamics, not just her own mental health or messiness.
If you're just joining in, this is Relationship Rewind on WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill. I'm your host, Jazz Bradley, and today we're talking with Next Steps attorney Eileen Riley about the song Messy by Lola Young.
Right. And some of that mental health, I mean, we don't know what she's experienced unless you've kind of followed her story and the interviews that she might have done. She could be saying all of these things because of the impact of a domestic violence relationship, or even a relationship that maybe wasn't as heightened, but it was starting to turn that way. Feels like she's really talking about, like you had mentioned, her identity isn't going to be good enough, whether it be for herself or for somebody else. Whatever she's been trying to improve on and do, it's not been good enough. And it's so relatable. I can relate to almost every lyric in this song because of my own story and my own relationships.
The actual quote that I read that she said about this song, I actually wrote it down here so that I could tell you what it was, because it was they did an interview of her in Metal magazine in December of 2024. And she says, Messy is an ADHD anthem. It really showcases everything I felt during my last relationship. But also it is deeper than that, as it talks about how I feel about myself in general, being too messy one day and too clean another, struggling to find that balance in myself. And I'm like, wow, you got that wrong, girl.
Yeah.
And if she were in the room with us, I would say that to her. I would say, you've got it the other way around. Yes, it does have some connection to how your mind works and how your who you are work. But if I was going to say deeper than that, it would be the relationship is what's brought this out to the surface and this inability for, I mean, it's just a toxic relationship. But I do know that she's 25 years old. She's a star, and she is willing to turn this inside to herself rather than look at the relationship itself. And I see that over and over and over again with the people that I work with in domestic violence situations. They're more willing to blame themselves than anybody else. You forget how strong and how powerful of a person you are to have even survived because you're so busy blaming yourself or looking for a reason why somebody would do this to you. And I think that's to me the underlying piece in this, which I would not have understood if I just listened to the lyrics the first time I heard the lyrics and then I printed off the lyrics and read the lyrics. I would have said, "Ooh, this is a DV song. This is about a relationship that is a toxic, abusive relationship." And that's when I sent the email and said, "Have you guys heard this? You know, I just heard this the other night. It seems really pertinent to the kind of work that we do." And then I delve into it a little bit deeper and I see we have this classic kind of, it's my fault kind of her understanding of why this song came out to be is different than how I received it. And it's reflective of the different places that we are in our lives. And I would bet that's true for anybody that listens to almost any song. If it connects with you, it's connecting to you because there's something in it that you relate to, something that you can say, "I was there."
I like how you said like it was like kind of opposite, like we're really like if she was here with us now and like we'd be like, you know, you said this about like maybe it's your mental health and your diagnoses of ADHD and the schizoaffective disorder or whatever that might be. But did you realize that, you know, it sounds like you're being controlled by that ex-partner? Or it sounds like there was power and control dynamics and that toxic relationship. And because of being told you're not good enough all the time, because of that trauma and that cycle of abuse, you know, that could heighten your mental health, absolutely, but that doesn't mean you're the one that's at fault.
Right. I mean, like she starts out, "You know I'm impatient, so why would you leave me waiting outside the station when it was like -4 degrees?" That's just standing on its own is abusive relationship. "Tell me, get a job, ask me where the hell I've been." That's classic DV controlling. "And I'm too clever, and then I'm too stupid, dumb. You hate it when I cry, unless it's that time of the month, and I'm too perfect till I show you that I'm not. 1,000 people I could be for you, and you hate the whole damn lot." That is it in a nutshell. This person could not do anything right for the other person.
It is a typical domestic violence relationship that we often hear, especially that self-blame, like, "Oh, well, I could have done this better," or "Maybe I shouldn't have overreacted that one time. I could have done this differently." Our podcast is for youth. Lola herself is only 25 years old, and she's already experiencing these things. Abusive relationships shouldn't be taken lightly, and I think oftentimes they're just kind of been put in a place of like, okay, so she's saying that it's all about her mental health and not the relationship.
Well, the thing about problematic about blaming yourself is that you are just confirming the narrative that the abusive person has already been telling you about yourself. And so when you confirm that for yourself over and over again, even if you're out of the relationship and you're still confirming that, it's really hard then to step away, step outside of that narrative and actually see yourself clearly for the powerful survivor that you are. I have said over the years, honestly, survivors are the strongest people I have ever had the privilege of knowing. The kinds of things that they have survived, the kind of tactics that they've managed around, or these women with 3 kids, 4 kids that are trying to negotiate getting a meal on the table around a person who's going to dump it on the floor. That sort of stuff is mind-blowing to me that, and I get it because I was there too, but you can't step back and say, "Wow, I did that. I managed that whole meal so that my kids didn't have to see their father turn into a jerk. And it cost me a lot to do that, but I did it." And you don't stop to congratulate yourself for what you've accomplished. You don't even see it. if you're continually telling yourself, well, it was my fault, it was my fault. I should have remembered that he likes his napkin on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. You know, whatever stupid thing it is that happened, and you lose perspective is really what happened.
It's that survival mode that we hear survivors talk about. They're just trying to get through day by day. And those little things, they just don't matter anymore. They just try to get them done so that there isn't a consequence that they have to face. And I often also hear survivors say, like, how did I get it to be this way? Like, how did it get so bad? And it's that buildup of the abuser is doing it in a way that they can't notice it, right? It's ever so slightly day by day building. And then it just becomes routine and that pattern and that cycle. Being in that survival mode, they don't realize that they are being manipulated or gaslit.
You know, I've often had people say to me, I can't believe that you were ever in a domestic violence situation, because they see me as a strong, powerful, professional woman, and they can't even imagine it. And I spent a lot of time analyzing myself, also thinking, who was I back then, and how was I that way? Because I wasn't raised that way. I was raised in a pretty sheltered home, as I described earlier, and I was from a family of 7 girls and 3 boys. Women dominated in our family, and the first 5 of us were girls. So I never was raised with any sense that there wasn't something I could do because I was a female. It was always, you know, the world is open for you. Whatever you decide you want, you can get. And then I got into this abusive relationship, my first love, my first husband, the father of my children, and then I was there and I was living it. And then I got out and I ignored it, which happens a lot. I didn't look at it at all for quite some time. But when I actually started law school and I could actually had time to think about it, I began processing. And the only thing that made any sense to me, for me personally, I read about this thing called cognitive dissonance. And it is a psychological phenomenon, but it's an understood thing that humans do to keep themselves sane, because we have to have our external reality match our internal reality in order to stay sane. Otherwise, we're living in two different worlds, and you can't reconcile the two worlds if your outside is different than your inside. So if you're living in an abusive relationship or a toxic relationship, your external reality is saying you're stupid, you're dumb, you're fat, you're ugly, you're a bad mother, you're a bad wife, you're a bad partner. The world would be better if you didn't exist. That's your external reality. If your internal reality is, wait a minute, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm beautiful, I'm smart, I'm accomplished, I'm a great mother, I take care of all of these people, one of those has to go, or your sanity goes. And what happens, I know this happened to me, is that I adjusted my inner reality, and my inner reality moved to be the same as my external reality. I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm a bad mother, I don't have any sense, whatever the things were said. And I began to believe those things about myself. And as you said, you get used to it, almost deadened to it. What has to happen, and what happened to me anyway, is something so egregious happens that you're just sort of jerked out of that place and you're forced to look at the truth of it. And then you can say, okay, this is not true. This is not who I am. This is not the truth. And so now, in order to not go crazy, I have to change my external reality. And that's when people are ready to leave. They say, okay, this person is saying this to me and it is not true. And I can't survive in this sort of environment. So I'm gonna get away and get out. And that was the only way I could understand the choices that I made, and the fact that I stayed so long in this terrible relationship, and all of the things that people ask survivors, you know, I asked myself.
Survivors go through way more than anyone really realizes, except for the survivor themselves. And even through all of the stories that we hear, we don't hear the full picture. When you said like that one thing that pulls them out or just like gets them to see that the truth is like this isn't okay, I feel like oftentimes that could be either an assault that's happened to them, or maybe something's happened to children if children children are involved and they're like, this isn't right, this is wrong. And that's like when you said that reality change shifts and they might start seeking support, or they might maybe tell a medical professional, hey, this happened. And I think that change is super important. Just to relate it back to Lola Young's song, I think that we hear that shift because now, like, she is realizing, like, the song itself is her realizing that behaviors weren't okay. Even if she's relating it back to herself, she can still say it's not okay.
I agree. She definitely says that, whether she knows she's saying that or not. She definitely is saying that. And sometimes maybe the thing that jerks somebody out of their reality is a song like Lola's song, where they're sitting there in their living room and they're watching the Grammys. And there's this woman sitting there pouring her heart and soul out into the piano and out into the universe and singing your life back to you, where you say, oh my God. And you have one of those revolutionary moments in your life where you know things have to change. And, you know, I think that's when places like Next Step are critical to being there, being present, being available for when the person reaches out, to have a hand that they can grab hold of. It's a partnership. It's a hand to grab hold of. It's not a hand out. It is something that is saying, I see you, I hear you. These are the things that we have, and you choose what you need from us. And if we can, we will. And I think that that is so powerful, to have those types of things available. They didn't exist when I was going through it. So I have a perspective of 50 years of watching the growth in this arena in terms of services that are available to survivors, from zero to today, where there's a lot. I mean, there's still not enough. You can always do more. We can't help everybody, one agency or even 10 agencies. And the real change would be if we could figure out how to change the behavior. I would love to make my job obsolete. It would be wonderful.
I think that's what we strive for, is that prevention piece and making the behaviors end, and seeing the toxic relationships and seeing the abusive relationships and behaviors not exist anymore, especially in social media now, because that's where people are living, right? We're living online. We're living in a time where the internet is very important and is used almost daily for a lot of different people. And we're watching more TV and Netflix and all of the different platforms that people stream to watch shows, and even music. Music is changing and being talked about more, like we are talking about today. And we're here and we're willing to help and hold on to someone if they want our help. We're ready to make that change for survivors.
I'd like to thank Eileen for being our guest speaker this month. We are excited to have a variety of insights on such popular series for young people and the impacts they may have on those watching. You've been listening to Relationship Rewind. I'm your host, Jazz Bradley, and I hope you join us again next month on the third Tuesday from 4:30 p.m. to 5 p.m., where we'll be continuing this conversation and breaking down another relationship in popular media. You can also listen to our live stream or subscribe to our podcast at WERU.org on the WERU smartphone app. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Music. If you're a young person in Maine who is interested in being a guest speaker on the show, have ideas of media that we could talk about, or you know of a young person who might be interested, please reach out to me at jbradley@nextstepdvproject.org.